time for the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
So we've got a lot going on here today on the Lunch Break. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless, as always, hanging out with you. A lot of conversation that doesn't revolve around Samford this week. We will continue that at about 11:30. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, Justin's colleague, joins us. We'll talk college football with her. 12:30, we'll talk to Neil Greenberg of The Washington Post, get his thoughts on some NFL lines and some great games this weekend. Justin, let's just jump in, continuing with what we've talked about a lot this week. Offensively, you know, I don't know what we'll see against Samford, but it's going to look good. They're going to just be so much better than Samford. So sort of a non-factor. I mean, I think there's some things that they'll want to work on situationally. But as we start to turn our attention to the Iron Bowl, and you mentioned this yesterday, I don't think either offense can really afford to play this game conservatively.
No, I think this is going to be a game for Auburn, the Samford game, where they just got to get some confidence back. They, against Ole Miss, definitely against LSU, but a lot of games this season, even a couple of ones that they've won, they just haven't done a good job of finishing drives. And yeah, it's an FCS team, and no one's going to be impressed if you do that, but it's just a matter of seeing yourself get into those scoring opportunities and get them on the board in a game where you're playing against somebody who's not your teammate, I think there's going to be some benefit to that. If you're going to get any benefit of this game whatsoever, it's going to be get some confidence back. Just say, hey, we can do this. Let's get it rolling again and see if you can carry it on against Alabama, because that's going to be the difference in the game. They're going to have their opportunities, and Alabama's going to have their opportunities. Once again, though, this game's going to be defined by how Auburn can convert their own scoring opportunities, and they have not done that the last couple of weeks. Ole Miss and the Georgia game were both proof of that. They just a couple of scoring trips in those games, and it almost cost them against Ole Miss, and it definitely cost them against Georgia.
What is it you think Auburn fans, because we've touched on the conversation about Gus Malzahn and how there's just a number of different avenues this could go, where he could be back next season, but it's possible he could not. And we've tried to steer clear mostly of that conversation because it's one you can find anywhere, and it's one that we'll continue to have over the offseason. What is it that Auburn fans, if they gave me 4 or 5 bullet points, you think that they would want in the next coach? I mean, I think we're talking recruiting, we're talking development, we're talking about, I'm sure, some sort of offensive philosophy. Like, what would it be that Auburn fans think that they can find in a coach that Gus Malzahn isn't doing? Because he is recruiting well. Mm-hmm. They do recruit well. I think it's safe to say, even though it's contrary to what I think the general narrative is, Gus Malzahn is putting players in the NFL. He is, in fact, his staff and him are developing talent. And so then it starts to get down to, okay, how many wins a year do you need, and how consistently do you need to beat your rivals? Is it at about a 500 clip? Could it be a little less than every other? You know, like, what is it that Auburn fans so desperately want in their next coach, and what is it that they think the next coach can do? So basically what I'm saying is, less interested in who you think the next coach would be, but what is it that the next coach brings that Gus Malzahn cannot, or what is it that Gus Malzahn can do to change those results to appease Auburn fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be just being able to play better offense against quality opponents. And we're in a day and age that, you know, you might want to put up a defensive head coach with your next coach because you go the opposite of what you just had. But great defense is good. I mean, it's important, and Auburn's got a defense that, you know, I wrote about today, could be the best they've had in a very, very long time. But what's winning college football games? What's the defining line between all of your national championship contenders right now? Is that they're pretty dang good on the offensive side of the ball. So you just got to find. I think the big question is, if Auburn was to have a new coach, the number one goal is, can you be better on offense in games that mean the most? Because right now you have the foundation's laid on defense. And even if Kevin Steele retired tomorrow or decided to take another job, Auburn would be set up because of the way they've recruited and rolled in the talent. It's going to be about trying to turn the corner on offense. And that's the thing, is like, give me someone who can put up points against the top teams in the country. And it's like, it's hard to do that. And you can't just like snap your fingers and just say, all right, this is the guy.
There's also some real, we look around the program right now or around the country, and some of the best programs not only have obviously talented coaches and staffs, but staffs that have been there for a number of years. Alabama, they have high turnover, but Nick Saban's been there for a dozen years. I mean, you look at Dabo Sweeney, he's not far behind Nick Saban in the time he spent at Clemson. Lincoln Riley was an assistant under Stoops, even though he was young. There was a ton of consistency with Stoops there for, what, almost two decades? And then Ryan Day, a little bit different, but with Urban Meyer, very consistent. He's been a winner everywhere he went. Ryan Day steps in, and they've looked great. So there is also an argument to the level of consistency that you get when you stick with a coach. Obviously, a lot of Auburn fans don't think that consistency is at a high enough level right now. Let's go to Daniel, who's been waiting on the phone. 321-1390 is how you can join the conversation here on the Lunch Break. Daniel, what's up?
Guys, I was going to answer your question about, you know, next coach kind of thing. I'm not saying Auburn's going to be there. I don't think they will, at least not this year. But so maybe this is something I wish that Gus would do, just develop it himself. When you see him and Bruce Pearl doing anything together, it's so, so obvious what one massive aspect of his coaching and who he is needs to be developed, and I think his wife could help him, and that is his public persona, his ability to inspire, him letting that guard down that he obviously does with his players and he obviously does with his coaches, just giving access to people so that they want him to succeed and that they like ability. Increasing those things, the ability to be a leader and inspire up front, publicly, not just X's and O's, improve what you do. Obviously, that's got to improve too. But I think that I don't know if a lot of people will call it and say that's what's missing. But how many people are split up right now in the Auburn fan base all over the spectrum? They've got to have somebody that has Bruce Pearl-esque qualities that can inspire confidence and pull people together from a fractured base, if we're going to move forward together.
Yeah, Daniel, I think that's a really interesting point. And it's one that, look, I think anybody who has Gus Malzahn's record, especially against rivals right now, would be in.
Be as charismatic as you want, but at a certain point, winning and losing.
Right. However, I think when you talk about having the leash you may get or the favorability, I would say, with among people in the fan base, being someone who's a little bit more easier to connect with would definitely be helpful. I think it's something that other coaches across the country can get away with falling short of expectations because they have that. And it's not Malzahn's personality, but I think Daniel hit on a really good point there, is that he said that this is something the guard, you obviously recruits and players and coaches see a different side of him.
Right,
and I know that side exists. It's just you're not getting that outwardly facing. And again, like he said, the contrast you get with Bruce Pearl is very telling.
And to be fair,
different situations, yeah, different personalities, but
and just not many coaches out there like Pearl.
But I do think there are some lessons that can be learned in being a little bit more outgoing, a little bit more open to the fan base. And I think it, winning and losing is going to be ultimately what you're judged on. But I think it would help some of this.
And he's pretty good. He's guarded, but he's pretty good, I think, about choosing his words. And I thought it was a poor word choice this time to say a work in progress at this point in the season. Like it's nitpicking a press conference of his, but I was surprised that was the route he went. Daniel, anything else you want to add, man?
Well, I was going to say, what would you do? I mean, you guys are sports writers, you report on that. What would you do if he came out at the next press conference, and said, guys, I haven't beat these rivals. That is inexcusable. you know, I'm gonna pull this together because we've got the talent. And we, you know, what if he just opened himself up, said we're gonna get this thing fixed. Here's how, not just oh, it's a work in progress. Like every, you know, not just coach speak, but genuinely put himself out there and said, and here's the other thing, I'm gonna win you 10 games this season. It's not what we wanted, but it's not, you know, you know what I mean? What if that was the Gus Malzahn that took the podium? Every sports writer in the room would fall down, and the Auburn fan base would suddenly go, whoa, what? Maybe we need to think this.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if he was a little bit more out, like, I think part of it is going to be his personality, but yeah, if he was.
I like that he publicly said, hey, we didn't meet what we wanted to by getting the SEC championship. But 10 saying, wins with the record or with the schedule we have is tough to do.
He thinks they're going to do it. He thinks that they're going to be able to get to 10 wins, and he thinks that it's just that outwardly, I mean, I get some confidence. And every now and then you get that kind of snarkiness from him.
We've gotten once or twice
this
year.
When he jabs Alabama or something.
Before the Mississippi State game, we got a little bit of that.
It's a lot easier to do that when you're winning, though.
Right.
Exactly. So, but I think that would be the thing. It's, you know, I don't know. People aren't going to get back on board in large numbers if – you know, if he became, you know, kind of a bolder guy in front, you know, outwardly facing in front of the media, in front of the fan base. But I think it would help. It would definitely help. And it's going to be very interesting to see how he tries to handle this moving forward for sure. Appreciate the call, Daniel. Very good points there. And a really interesting question, just kind of alternate reality, Gus Malzahn, for sure.
John's on the line. We'll go to John now. 321-1390 is how you can join us here on the Lunch Break. Follow along at ESPNAU.com and the Listen Live Center and with the ESPN 106.7 app. What's up, John?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, good, guys. Just to kind of answer to the question, you know, it's been coach speak. It's been every press conference, it seems like, from day one from Malzahn about you know, and I've been a big Malzahn fan. You know, but at the same time, it's, we're going to get better. We're going to get better. We got a good team. You know, it's the same old coach speak. But the main thing is it might be time just to look himself in the mirror as far as offensive philosophy goes. You know, he's put up numbers as an offensive coordinator, but guys, this stuff just isn't working anymore. I mean, we've turned into Texas Tech over the past few weeks. I mean, we're slinging the ball 45, 50 times a game with a freshman quarterback. It's just not working. And I just, you know, I don't know, and you guys might have already hit on this already.
Uh-huh.
We just absolutely abandoned the running game against Georgia. Yeah. And, I mean, I know there have been better defenses we have faced along Malzahn's tenure that have had better run defenses, and we would just slam our head into the wall and just say, oh, well, we're going to get 2 yards, call it a day, let's go to the next play. That's what helps play action. But it seemed like the plays that Knicks were calling or Malzahn was calling – was play action pass, play action bubble, play action pass. It was like trying to pass to set up the run, and it was just not effective at all to me, in my opinion, against Georgia. And having that kid throw the 50 times, it's not Bo Nix's fault. Everybody wants to criticize Bo Nix. Wait a minute, no. That was the play calling aspect, and also too, may I add, the offensive coordinators over the past few years. You know, even though they say, quote unquote, Malzahn was not calling the plays, that's what had it out with him and Lashley. That's also what had it out with him in this last coordinator. I think it was Chip Lindsey.
Yeah.
You know, it's Malzahn's system. Mm-hmm. And those guys, you know, are going to call the plays they're told to call as offensive coordinators. But it's not their systems, because Lindsey was supposed to be open this offense up and throw the ball all over the place. Right. And with Auburn's athletes, I think it would have been a great fit. But he was stuck running Malzahn's system. Malzahn's offense, and again, it's just like fitting a square peg into a round hole. It's just not working anymore with unless you have an absolute athletic dual threat quarterback like Marshall was or Newton that could absolutely be devastating with that read option. It's just not working. And Nick's, don't get me wrong, that kid's got some talent, and he can run the football.
It's just different.
But he is. This is just way different, and I'm a huge Nick supporter. I love the kid. I think he's going to be great for Auburn. Mm-hmm. But right now, in this offensive philosophy, he's got 50 times a game throwing the football is the incorrect way to go with this offense.
Yeah, and good points there, John. We appreciate your call. My thing with Gus Malzahn's offense, and we saw it in 2017, it can work. You just got to, like, it's based on you. You got to be able to run your person. Your personnel is going to have to be better than it is right now.
And in most seasons at Auburn, a dual threat quarterback has been a part of it. But you have been one to point out, 17, the offense was extremely balanced.
Because you had Kerryon Johnson and a really good zone blocking offensive line. Think about Gus Malzahn's system, and it's changed over the years. I think the rules that have, you know,
substitutions.
The substitution rule really caught him. There's some other things like that, but think about Auburn's offense, and the thing about certain offenses in general, and I think you can point to different ones across football over the years, is that when you have the personnel for it in an Auburn system, it can work. You look at 2013 and 2014.
2013 was a weird offense. And
you can run four or five plays and it's going to work because they were going to play fast and they had the guys in place to make it work.
Well, and that's been a criticism we've heard over the last few weeks is, well, it seems like Justin, you know, when I read your film analysis, like, or, you know, whatever, they're only running a handful of plays. It's like, well, they've done that. I mean, but to some extent, like in 13, you might get the same look, but there's a bunch of different alternatives for that play. And
we had this conversation earlier this week. The play calling hasn't been bad this year. I don't think. I think the play calling for Auburn, for the most part, has been pretty good.
I think you can question a few moments like you could in any season, and I think you could question some personnel decisions, but I don't think it has been the biggest issue at all for the Auburn offense.
It's just the problem is I don't think Auburn's personnel is at the point where it can execute the things that Malzahn is calling for.
And I liked what you said yesterday, and you may have said this in the past, but I was thinking about it last night, and it was a good point. Like, sometimes it does feel like Auburn's offensive staff is overthinking itself, specifically Malzahn, where it's like, you've pointed this out, Auburn simply is not consistently executing at a high enough level to always be worried about the perfect play.
Yeah, if you get the perfect play call is not working every time. So run the plays that you can be successful with. Run the plays that can work for you. John mentions the fact you're asking the guy to throw the ball, a freshman quarterback, throw the ball 55 times a game. You can't do that. And why they're not doing that is because they're not good enough at run blocking this season. They just have not been a consistent enough running game this year. So they're having to resort to that. And that's not Malzahn, because what happens is if you have a rushing, if in Malzahn's offense, if you cannot run the ball, you are in trouble. Because so much of it is predicated on the fact that the defense is going to commit guys into the box that are going to be worried about the run at any moment, that then the play action, then the RPO stuff, that stuff works off of that. That's where Auburn's best offense is. When they have to take a snap, drop back, and read the field, there's not – they've added more plays and concepts over the years, and I think they picked up some from Lindsey, and I think they've picked up a few more this year. You see some differences in the passing game, but like, it's still not a very complex system. It doesn't have to be a complex system when it works, though. Right, and it's predicated on the most simple fact in the world. If you can run the ball, if you can run the ball effectively, and you can run the ball whenever you want to, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to run a Bill Walsh offense through the air. Like you can be simpler in your passing game if you're effective running it. Mm-hmm. The problem is right now is they're not effective running the ball, and so now you're having to rely more on a passing game that's very limited. So where do you go from here is the question. And there's two avenues, and I think there's a combination of them that you can go moving forward.
I want to get into that next. Let's get to break. We'll get into Justin's next 2 points after this. Also a reminder, Wings 94.3 has you covered for Auburn High School football playoffs, semifinals, Friday Night Lights, all that jazz. 6:30, Scott Bagwell, Rob Pate on Wings 94.3, kickoff at 7.
Follow the Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
Welcome back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. All right, so before we got to break, I was saying, where does Auburn's offense go from here? What happens with Malzahn? What happens with this offense? If Malzahn's back in 2020 and this Auburn's offense is what we think it's going to be, what's the difference? Like, what's going to be the difference? What has to change? And I think something has to, but There's two different options. I think a combination of them is probably the best way to go about it, not one or the other. Like I said before the break, if Auburn's offense is a limited passing game, it does not do a lot of different a variety of things. Most of the time because it hasn't had to, right? Because it's been so based on being a run play action team that if you don't have the running game, it's not quite as effective. The first thing is you just got to be better at running the ball next year, and you got to be better up front at blocking for the run.
Right, I think that has more to do with your line. I think Booby Whitlow may not be Kerryon Johnson, but he's a good running back.
DJ Williams
is looking fantastic for a freshman.
Right, and so Auburn's got to be better. They've got to build a better run blocking offensive line next year. That has got to be a priority. They're good at pass protection. I think Prince Tegwanogo is a good pass protector. Markel Harrell is a really good pass protector, and I think both of those guys have been great this season. They're good as a whole at pass protecting. They've got to be able to be that team that can mash people up front again, because that is going to be a defining factor. Because what we're about to see, you look at LSU slinging it all over the place, you look at Alabama slinging it all over the place, all these other teams, defenses are going to get smaller and more spread out. It's going to continue that trend. And to be able to be smash mouth, where Malzahn is so dangerous and where some of these offenses have been so dangerous in the past is this. Tom Herman did it too at Houston and Ohio State, and he's doing it at Texas, is the concept of the smash mouth spread. Power principles in spread out formations, and it is deadly effective when you can make them work together. The second thing I think is Auburn's got to find a way to update their passing game. And we've seen an example at LSU where they bring in Joe Brady and they marry his NFL passing experience, what he did with the Saints, into a system that, you know, Steve Ensminger had. They were able to kind of combine these two games. And it's just Auburn's got to be a little bit more updated, because if you're not going to be able to rely on running the ball so much in the future, you got to be able to be just dynamic through the air. And I think Auburn can learn how to be a more effective passing game. I don't think there's a Joe Brady out there, but I think there's a sense of Auburn's got to find a way to do something new in the passing game.
And to the point of Joe Brady, like, there may be another guy out there that's great, but how confident are you that you're going to be, out of all the assistants there are, that you're going to pick the right one?
But the setup makes sense. Well, look at it next season. Next season, Auburn brings back Bo Nix. Auburn brings back Seth Williams.
All your skill position players. I know Stove and Hastings aren't, but...
And maybe Stove's back. He's got another year.
Right.
But you got Williams and Schwartz. And some young guys with some great upside that I think you can build around. Matthew Hill, Shedrick Jackson. You got four wide receivers coming into this class that are all pretty good four-star talent that could play right away. Don't forget about Javarius Johnson, who a lot of people really like before he got hurt early on in his career at Auburn. He's had a red shirt this season. There's some weapons that you got to be able to find a way to take better advantage of that, because next season – you would like to be able to run the ball better, and maybe you can run the ball better with a new-look offensive line. That's a tough question, though, when you're going to have at least four new starters. So that's where the update's got to be. There's got to be some sort of evolution there, I think. And I don't think it's as simple as saying, hey, go get Joe Brady, or hey, he goes like, Malzahn's got to find a way to get it done.
And something that
whether it's bringing somebody in and listening to them, or adding something,
changing
on
his own philosophy,
it's got to be different, because right now they're having to rely on a passing game with a freshman quarterback and some wide receivers. It's harder to see where that's going when so much of your offense in the past has been built on run play action.
It does feel like, to some extent, although it's different in that he runs such a different offense than LSU ran for a number of years, like they're simply not maximizing the talent and the personnel they have right now. Is that a fair way of looking at it in your mind, Justin, that they have a bunch of skilled and talented players, not the best offensive line, but serviceable, I think, with some of what they have around it?
I don't think Auburn's personnel right now this season is the best for what Auburn is trying to do on offense. So try to develop around that, I think, is going to be the key there for the Tigers. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. There's going to be a lot to look for in 2020 when it comes to if Malzahn's still here, what that looks like, what the offense looks like, because there's got to be changes. And every year Auburn's been disappointing. There has been changes, but it might just be different than saying, hey, here's another assistant or here's something else, because the opportunity is there. There's plenty of potential in guys like Bo Nix and Anthony Schwartz and Seth Williams and these young wide receivers. There's plenty of potential. And then when you add the running game, there's potential. There's got to be a find a way to better accent all of that. Malzahn's done that some in the past. There's just got to be a full commitment.
Nicole Auerbach joins us next.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 1067.
I swear we always have the weirdest, like, intro music right before we bring on a guest.
There's nothing like bringing someone super credible in and then having them hear this late 70s police chase music.
This is definitely not Nicole Auerbach's vibe. And Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic is on the line right now. Nicole, we are sorry that you had to come into that music.
Next time, give me some Taylor Swift. Come on, Justin.
Well, so, like, yeah.
We'd like that.
Yeah,
here.
Taylor Swift, or yeah, we'll play Lana Del Rey for you. Get people really in the mood for college football talk.
I didn't know Nicole was into Lana. What a great selection of music.
Yes, Nicole and I have bonded through this both Taylor Swift's album and Lana Del Rey's album this year, for sure. Nicole, we glad to have you back on again. Want to start off with your latest story. It's the Traditionally Weird series. Painter and I have been huge fans
enamored.
Of it. We love it. This week's, I think this is one of my favorite story ideas that you've done this year, and they've all been really good, but this one right here, what coaches do with their gear when they change jobs is really, really fascinating to me. Just kind of break down what you learned from talking to coaches and what you heard from, like, what happens to all this stuff?
Well, as you guys know, I mean, they get so much stuff, like so much free stuff. Like, I've gone to the Phoenix spring meetings where you have, you know, Nike and different people have like events, and then you just see coaches come out of there with like trash bags full of new free gear. They have, you know, dozens and dozens of sneakers, like, and it's all the right colors, the exact right shades, and a lot of it has logos on it. And so you really can't wear that ever again, or at least in public when you change jobs. So I've always wondered this because I was visiting with Rick Barr in his first year at Tennessee, and he was telling me how he coached at three different schools that were all orange, but like different shades of orange.
Yep.
So he couldn't wear any of the ties because he had saved ties from different places, and he had to buy new ones every single time. And so I just got thinking about all of this. And especially the gear. And so I just decided, you know what? I'm going to put in some requests. I'm going to ask coaches that I'm seeing in the next few weeks, what do they do with it? And, you know, a lot of them talked about donating it and rounding it up, bringing it to homeless shelters, bringing it to Salvation Army. And what's funny is people in the comment section have addressed that. And they're like, oh, yeah, I remember, like, I saw all of this, like, when the Minnesota staff changed or whatever, you know, like at the local Salvation Army. But then I thought it was also really interesting to learn about the different coaches and kind of mementos they keep from different places. Like Tom Allen at Indiana has a baseball cap from everywhere he's been, and they're in his closet at home. Matt Rhule and PJ Fleck were talking about keeping a couple t-shirts and things at their summer houses where, you know, they're on vacation, they can wear stuff and they can, you know, be part of these places that they've been and not really necessarily get trouble for not wearing Minnesota or Baylor stuff.
Auburn fans, a little helpful hint, if there ever is any coaching changes whatsoever, check the thrift stores pretty soon after it, because something's going to happen.
Yeah, like, what if Gus Malzahn sported an Arkansas hat from 10 years ago right now? Like, the subliminal messaging there would be dangerous.
He still has his misspelled jersey that he talked about from the Cotton Bowl. You remember he was telling us about that immediately. He still had he broke it out the other day. I saw it. Nicole, I'm glad you mentioned PJ Fleck, because here's my question about PJ Fleck. Does he have this like collection of ties where he can get it from every, because he's one of the few in the country that gets the ties, but they always seem to be Minnesota colors.
Yeah, well, me and him had a long chat about the shade, because he was pulling up a picture from like his introductory press conference, and the tie he was wearing was not the right shade that he now knows. And so, but it's really hard when you're like, when you're flying or it's like happening really, really quickly,
right?
To get all of that stuff taken care of. And then once you get announced, like all the local, like custom suit places and all those places, like try to get your business. But, you know, so that was really interesting. So some of the coaches, in terms of the ties, like if I were them, I would keep the ties from everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't know what color scheme you're going to run back into. But some of them, like, did not keep any. Some of, like, I thought Mac Brown might have because, you know, maybe he had something. He said he didn't, but that he did have a lot of, like, navy and, like, blue stuff from his TV wardrobe that still work. You know, like, you add an accent color. But, yeah, I mean, like, Dave Clawson, who's at Wake Forest now, he was at Richmond, and they're the Spiders. So I, he was telling me he still has a Spider tie, if anyone needs one.
But cool.
So, yeah, so it's very funny, like, who keeps what, how much do you keep? And it seems also that, like, the more stops they've been, they keep a little bit less because you realize you're not wearing and using the old stuff as much. But, yeah, super fun. And I also think there's a difference when it's, like, your alma mater, or if it's like a job that you are leaving on good terms, so you're being fired,
right,
of that stuff comes into play.
Right. Bringing up PJ Fleck, this is going to be a really, really awkward segue, but Minnesota losing to Iowa this past weekend, Baylor going down to Oklahoma. When you look at the college football playoff rankings and you think about that committee, you know, getting in the minds of that committee, they got to feel pretty okay with the fact that those two teams kind of took care of themselves, because
it could have gotten hairy.
It was going to get really weird, especially with Baylor, I thought, in kind of their resume. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that the committee just has an easier job on their hands now that Minnesota and Baylor's kind of been brushed off a little bit for now?
Well, I mean, I think Minnesota, like, that was going to resolve itself, and they're still in the race. I mean, if they were a one loss Big Ten champ, they beat Ohio State in the title game or something. I mean, like, for sure they're going to go to the playoff. The Baylor thing is more interesting because committee clearly didn't have a ton of respect for them and had them at 13 undefeated. And then you would have thought Oklahoma would have gotten some credit for beating a good team, and they only split up one spot. So it's like, no, the committee really does not think Baylor's a good team. But, you know, I mean, so that kind of clarifies, like, where the Big 12 is in this pecking order of chances to get a spot, even as a one-loss champ. But like I said, I think Minnesota, like the Big Ten champ, is really well positioned regardless. And so I don't know if that necessarily changes things in terms of, you know, the committee's job. But it definitely clarifies what the committee feels about the Big 12 and their chances to make it.
Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic joining us talking college football. Okay, I'm going to lay out a scenario for you. You tell me what the reaction would be like, I guess, from everybody except for people around here. What happens if Alabama wins on wins the Iron Bowl and Georgia loses to LSU in the SEC championship game, and we're talking about Alabama going as the 4 seed in the playoff over a one loss Big 12 champion, whoever that may be, Baylor or Oklahoma, and a one loss Pac 12 champion, Utah or Oregon? What's the reaction like, and what's kind of the fallout, especially in a format that people already have problems with because there's 5 big conferences and only 4 spots to get in? Now you'd be shutting out 2.
So is your scenario saying LSU is winning out beating Georgia?
LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, 1, 2, 3, and then Alabama gets in at the 4 spot.
Yeah, I mean, that would be incredibly frustrating, and I think there are a lot of people. I think, like, there were people who were kind of bracing themselves for that possibility.
Right.
You know, if Tua was still there, because you're seeing that they didn't drop that much when they lost to LSU. The committee was still giving them some respect. But if they were able to do that without Tua, basically on the shoulders of one performance from Mac Jones, that's not a conference championship game. That's the difference with the Cardale Jones comparison.
Right.
Because they showed that there wasn't a drop-off, and they still were a conference champion. So they had that tiebreaker.
Yeah. They won, like, 59-0, too.
Yeah. But that's the difference here. Like, you would be saying, if you're getting in as a non-conference champion, you're supposed to be, this is our favorite phrase, unequivocally one of the best 4 teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can make that case with Alabama, with their resume, with their defense this year. And then you would be saying it with a backup quarterback. Like, if they were to do that, I mean, people would riot. Like, we would be hearing about we need expansion, like, 5 minutes after that was announced. Because the whole point of the system was to do things the way that let's say it's Oregon, let's say it's Oklahoma, like the way that they did their seasons, right? They won their conference championship. Oregon went out, scheduled Auburn, and played that game. And things like that, they're doing what the committee has told them to do. The Big 12 even revamped their entire conference, like the race, how it works, and added a conference championship game.
A completely useless one. Like,
right, but I'm saying, like, the point is, like, even if you'd be having all these people saying, hey, we did what we were supposed to do, and you're still just picking it based on, like, whoever you think you watch and you like watching. And so I think then that would immediately, you know, ramp up the push for expansion.
Oh, for sure.
Again, that's not what it's supposed to be. It's not how it's supposed to work, even though you give people that best team.
Nicole, sticking with Alabama, at The Athletic, you have a story that focuses on Nick Saban's decision that, as you wrote, turned into a lightning rod issue. I would not have played him in that game at all, but since they elected to play him, I was okay with him going through the entire first half. Obviously, now looking back, I think Nick Saban would do things differently. Where do you fall on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard to get too worked up on it, because I think you can definitely justify what Nick Saban did. Because, listen, if it was Western Carolina, of course you say, like, don't play him. But even if you're favored, even if you know you're going to beat Mississippi State, it's still a Power 5 opponent in your division. Like, it's not a nothing game. So you could justify wanting him to play. He wants to play and feels good. He threw for over 400 yards against LSU. The injury that he sustained was not the same ankle. Like, it wasn't an ankle injury. So it was a freak thing that could have happened literally on any play. It could happen the first game of the first play of the Iron Bowl. It could have happened at any point. And that's true with all freak injuries. So to me, I think it's I understand why people are frustrated, and hindsight's 2020, and you don't want to have a college season where, you know, certainly a Heisman finalist at the very least, but one of the great quarterbacks of this era isn't able to finish this season. But I think you can justify playing him. And then, you know, I've been talking about this with our colleague Grace Rayner this week, and other people. Like, Ohio State and Clemson have quarterbacks that you could compare to Tua, and they've been in a lot of blowouts too, and they tend to let those quarterbacks play into the second half. They'll usually go a series or two in the third quarter. So if you look at all of those things, like, it would make sense that if he started, he would be in the game at that moment. So I don't really have any hot takes about it. I think if you look at all the context and what other people were doing, you can justify it. So it sucks, but I think, like, you know, the path to getting there makes sense to me.
Well, if you don't have any hot takes, why did we bring you on here?
At Nicole Auerbach is where you can find her on Twitter, senior writer for The Athletic, and you can also hear her on Sirius.
Nicole, it feels like we do this every week, or at least every other week now. You do your setting up your Saturday story, and I know that'll go up tomorrow at The Athletic. What are we watching this weekend? Because it doesn't seem like this is a good slate, and I feel like we've said that about half the weeks of the season this year. Down in the SEC, we are celebrating our most hallowed tradition, SoCon Challenge Weekend, where everybody's getting the cupcakes for the most part before they head into the big rivalry games.
Georgia and Texas A&M.
Georgia and Texas A&M is pretty much it.
Yeah.
But what should we pay attention to? Auburn's got an early game. Auburn fans are going to have pretty much the afternoon and the evening off. Like, what should we be watching this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When the SEC has, you know, its cupcake week, it's not always the most exciting schedule. But there are some really fun games. I think, you know, at the top of the Big Ten, you've got Penn State, Ohio State, you've got Michigan, Indiana. That should be fun, too. The Big 12 is, like, totally unpredictable this year, and there's been crazy comebacks and crazy finishes. So, you know, like, Texas Baylor in the afternoon slot, like, could be an interesting one. And then you got Pitt, Virginia Tech. The Coastal is super weird, as always. And then honestly, like, it might be a good weekend to, like, dip into the Group of Five, because there's some really interesting races in the AAC. You got, like, SMU Navy and Temple Cincinnati could be interesting. And then if you want to stay up for, like, the very weird football, which is honestly the best when everyone's a little loopy, Boise State, Utah State, could be the best game of the year in the Mountain West. So I guess I would just say, like, dip around, be into other leagues, maybe go down to the Group of Five level, and there's going to be some fun. There's going to be some fun games, even though it's not necessarily like an Alabama-Auburn level of matchup.
Mm-hmm. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic has been our guest. Nicole, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for hopping on with us.
All right, thanks. Better music next time, though, guys. All
yeah,
right.
we'll see what we can do. Our hands are tied for the most part. That was Nicole Auerbach. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, what's on tonight? We'll wrap up hour number one.
Listen to The Lunch Break on the Abby Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Podcast of The Lunch Break, presented by University Ace Hardware. ESPNAU.com, the ESPN 106.7 Podcast Center. You can also listen on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theater here in Auburn.
Justin?
Yes.
Is it time?
It's time.
All right.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, Thursday Night Football. I got a pretty good matchup tonight. Colts-Texans, 7:20 on Fox. Deshaun Watson coming off of them getting absolutely blitzed by the Ravens.
Ever held back by his coaching staff.
Playing a Colts team that has done really well, despite the fact that Andrew Luck's not their quarterback anymore.
That stings, right? Like, if you're a Colts fan.
But Jacoby Brissett has played really well, I thought, this season. And that's very, very admirable what the Colts have been able to put together in Luck's absence. That's at Fox at 7:20, Thursday Night Football. Also, ESPN at 7 tonight. ACC action on the football field. NC State and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, we didn't expect much from them this year. They've had a couple of pretty interesting wins. They've had a lot of losses. They're in Atlanta on a Thursday night. Could it get weird against NC State?
Seems
NC State
like
has
it.
Not been a very good team this year. We'll
Go
see.
Go Hokies.
That has nothing to do with either of these teams.
Virginia Tech?
Georgia Tech.
Oh, I thought you said Virginia Tech.
Georgia Tech.
I was wondering why they were in Atlanta.
Yeah, Georgia Tech.
Well then, good luck.
Yes.
To both teams.
The only two NBA games on tonight are both on TNT. 7 o'clock, Trailblazers-Bucks.
Carmelo Anthony
is there. Don't know if Lillard's going to play tonight. Bucks continue to be
they should beat the Trailblazers.
Pretty dang good. Especially at home. 9:30, Pelicans-Suns. Still waiting for Zion to come back. Suns don't have DeAndre Ayton. This was supposed to be a matchup between the last two number one picks.
And instead, it is not.
It is not. So,
come on, Zion. I want you healthy. We are all rooting for you because we all selfishly want to watch you do crazy things.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of crazy things, did you see what Luka did last night? I told you he would destroy the Warriors. He did. 26 minutes, he had a 30-point triple-double. It's the fastest 30-point triple-double in NBA history.
Yikes.
He is playing like an MVP right now, and it is pretty impressive for a second-year guy. Technically, second year in the NBA,
sure.
But he's been playing pro ball for a while now. He is just a rare basketball talent, and Dallas is going to be very fortunate that they have him.
They went from one generational talent right into the next, and they've Kristaps Porzingis, not bad either, not a bad player,
not a bad combo,
something to build around. But no, I didn't get to watch that. I was hosting bingo.
A week before Thanksgiving today.
Okay.
So we get an early start on our midday college basketball, you know, those tournaments that we all see.
The Maui.
Right now, Villanova is playing in the Myrtle Beach Classic on ESPN2.
Is that in South Carolina?
Yes.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Am I thinking about that?
ESPN2 at 3:30. After that, you get Ohio and Baylor. So a little afternoon basketball for you if you're interested. ESPNU at 6 tonight. Number 18, Xavier taking on Towson. ACC Network at 7:30 tonight. Toledo goes on the road to face Notre Dame. ESPN2 at 8. Number 1, Duke is playing Cal. And in the I believe that is the 2K game, the thing they do at Madison Square Garden.
All right. Duke back at number 1.
ESPNU at 8, a fun matchup here. Buffalo and UConn.
All right, go Bulls.
So there's a number of solid matchups.
What's going on with UConn?
College basketball.
Not following much UConn basketball. Are they on the rise? Are we still dipping?
They're reloading. They got Hurley. They got Hurley now. Like, they're trying to build towards trying to be back to what they used to be. But it's going to be tough. Kevin Ollie did a number on that on that place for sure. HBO Family, 11:20 tonight. We got to wait late for it. It's been a while,
Late HBO. Look out.
The Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
R.I.P. Dan, we love you, don't we?
But this is HBO Family, so you don't have to be worried.
Oh, fair enough. Late night HBO Family.
It's been a while since we've recommended this movie, but it's a classic, Painter. We have to say it.
Up.
At 11:20, The Big Green.
Oh, take that goat. You take that goat and you score yourself a goal, Green Machine.
The Big Green, 11:20 on HBO Family. And then finally, Painter, House Hunters International, HGTV, 9:30 tonight.
Guam.
Barcelona.
Barcelona. Barcelona. And here comes Logan down the final stretch, and he's entered the studio. All right, Barcelona. I can dig it.
Mm-hmm.
Got a friend who left for Spain he took a late flight last night.
Oh, wow.
Got out of New York around 11.
Mm.
Then I guess, what is that, a 7-ish hour flight? Is it 9 hours? How what are we looking at?
I think it's a little shorter, and it might be 5, 6, 7, something.
Well, it's not as bad as I thought then, to get across the pond there.
You would think, yeah, because...
Because going from like Atlanta to California takes you a good 4 to 5.
And it's about the same width, honestly. Our country is very wide.
Wide load, baby. Mm-hmm. Well, Alex, be safe and be merry.
Mm-hmm.
I hope your trip in Spain alongside the House Hunters International folks is fantastic. Is that it?
That's it.
Wow. All right, cool. Justin, what's happening as we round out hour one? We just spoke to your colleague, Nicole. She had some great stuff up about a number of different college football issues. You've got your own stuff going on right now. Busy time of the year at The Athletic. If people are subscribing as they should be doing, it's a cup of coffee, folks. And you want your Auburn football coverage. What are they going to get this week?
Well, this week you're going to get the film room on why Auburn's offense didn't really change that much against Georgia and why it ended up working in the fourth quarter. You have a story on, and I think this is a point where we haven't really talked about it much, but it shouldn't go unnoticed. There's a lot of finger pointing going around with Auburn to be saying, hey, this defense is awesome and your offense is trash. And it's valid. Those are valid criticisms. But I think the key to this team this year is that they are not doing that with one another. And Will Hastings said it earlier this week. There was a time during the 2017 season where there was some pretty bad finger pointing between the defense to the offense not doing it up. And people, the leadership got together and said, hey, we're going to cut that out. We're not, we're a team. You know, even though one side might be playing better than the other one, we're a team. We're going to do this as a team. And, of course, Auburn goes on to win the last couple of games of their season. And they had a 2019, because guys went through that, guys like Derek Brown and Will Hastings and Marlon Davidson and Javaris Davis, key leaders like that, they haven't had to go through that time again. They haven't had to have the come to Jesus meeting yet in the meeting rooms, because this team's very together, and that's the one thing. Like, you can be frustrated about this season, and you should be if you're an Auburn fan. I'll give you one thing. This team is like, in the face of, if you're a defense and you're saying, okay, we're throwing all these great efforts up night after night after night, and we're not getting wins. You know, people who don't have that strong a leadership might have given up. They might have folded at this point. But this team hasn't done it. They kept swinging all the way to the end against Georgia and almost had a chance to come back in that one.
James,
keep part of that.
Colin, call us back. Get in touch with us. Someone just got on the line, and they said, hey, it doesn't take 6 hours to get from Atlanta to the West Coast. We didn't say that. He said if you did it on a kite, maybe. Thanks for being that guy. Really appreciate your insight. Great insight, and it was certainly needed. 334-321-1390.
When we come back, my last story for The Athletic today, the one that just went up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best Auburn defense since when? The answer may surprise you.
Now, more from your daily lunchtime companions on The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, call 321-1390. Toll free 1-888-382-7502 or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Hour number two of the Lunch Break underway. Let's jump right back to the phone lines. James is on the line. What's going on, James?
Hey, I wanted to comment on what you guys were saying last hour about if Gus Malzahn. You know, I've been kind of laying low on that all year long. I hadn't really weighed in on that. You know, I'm just not one that's campaigning for coaches getting fired.
Right.
Especially if, you know, they're having a fairly decent year now. It's not exactly what the fans want, but it could have been worse because they could have lost to Oregon. I mean, there's a lot of different ways this season could have went.
For sure.
And now, I've been saying the last 2 years, I said it this year, and I said it last year under Jared Spitter. I said Auburn doesn't have an offensive foundation that they rely on. When you look at other schools across the country, Oklahoma, the last three quarterbacks that they recruited were RPO quarterbacks, and they was very successful with it. Where they brought in Jalen Hurts. Clemson was the same way with Ty Boyd, Deshaun Watson, and Trevor Lawrence. They were the same three type of quarterbacks they recruited to that. The same way with Ohio State. The last five quarterbacks they had, they recruited to that. Now, all of his most successful years were RPO quarterbacks with Cam Newton and Nick Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
I said it when they brought Jared Stidham in. He wasn't a fit. He didn't fit the scheme of what they already had in place. So they had to adjust offense around that. And they're doing the same thing with Bo Nix is not a fit. That's why he looks so terrible in that offense. That's an RPO offense, and they're recruiting these statues at quarterback to stand back there in a pocket. And that's actually a model that a lot of these, even in the pros, they're going away from that. I know they got Tom Brady, but heck, the guy's been around so long, you look around the league, you know, you got the mobile quarterbacks. Bo Nix is just not a fit. They're not recruiting to the system that they have in place. They're adjusting the system to the quarterbacks they had in Jared Stidham and Bo Nix.
Yeah, and the thing about it, James, is we appreciate your call. We got another one on the line here. Thing is like Nix is a lot more mobile than Stidham. He's just not that design runner as much as Marshall and Cam Newton were. And I just you got to find ways to play up better to that talent.
Yeah, he's proven on some big downs. He's been able to pick up a few yards.
And Stidham was successful in 2017, but it was the pieces around him. You got to figure out the best way to work. And what worked with Stidham is those quick throws and being able to play off of what Kerryon Johnson did to you in the running game, taking shots off of that. If you can run the ball, Stidham looked better. And I think it would be the same thing for Nix. It's just different. But you're right. In the fact, James, is that it's a different change, and it doesn't seem like Auburn's quite as adapted as well as it could have to those new look quarterbacks for sure. Appreciate the call, James. Brian is on the line next. What's up, Brian?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Let me tell you what happened yesterday.
Okay.
I was sitting doing homework on the couch. My wife approaches me in an extremely shy manner, and is like, "Hey." So my cousin invited us over for Thanksgiving. I was like, cool, let's go to that. She's like, well, the thing is, it's on Saturday at 3 o'clock. I'm like, well, I'm not going to that.
Is there something going on then, Brian?
Yeah. And she's like, I know it's in the middle of your game, but is there any way? And I'm like, nope, nope, not happening. I will get us kicked out of there. We'll never go back.
Are you sleeping on the couch right now? Have you got what's the consensus been there? Have you managed to get or stay in her good graces by allegedly perhaps siding with your Tigers over family Thanksgiving on Saturday?
Well, luckily enough for me, she has to work that day, and she works until 6, and their Thanksgiving's supposed to be over by then.
Perfect.
So luckily, I got out of that one.
All there right. You go. There you go.
That's what positive. We want to hear. We want you to be able to rally your Tigers. What are we thinking in terms of the latest in Auburn football or basketball news, Brian?
Here's my thought, and I had kind of an epiphany yesterday after I got a phone with you guys. One of the top five most watched college football games in the history of college football was the 2011-2012 title. Alabama-LSU rematch.
Mm-hmm.
What? As much as we've been screwed over by the refs this year, and we know that you know, they really can't argue against, you know, the conspiracy of let's keep Auburn out so we can have some good games. What are the chances that this happens again to put Alabama back in the playoffs against another a number one LSU team? I mean, why would the SEC not want to do that? Revenue-wise, that makes so much sense. I'm not saying it's going to happen. If the refs call a fair game, Auburn has an outstanding chance to win that.
Yeah.
But we've all seen the referees call games in favor of Alabama against other opponents. If there's people out there that thinks that it's not going to happen against Auburn, Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown are going to be fighting for their lives every single play. They're going to be held. They're going to be dragged down. They're going to be called for offsides when they're not. I mean, literally everything that we can think is going to happen is probably going to happen to keep Auburn from winning that game.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were talking about this, a shadow called yesterday and was talking about kind of this, the conspiracy and the officiating. It's like, yeah, Auburn's gotten the short end of the stick this season in officiating, and they've made their own mistakes. They could have won those games despite that, and those aren't the reasons why they lost.
Yeah, we can focus on their own bad errors, but yeah, they can't get a break.
Yeah, it hasn't helped for sure, and I think it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, if you want to believe in a conspiracy, like, yeah, the best case scenario for the SEC to get two teams in the playoff is if Alabama wins on Saturday. Because, I mean, unless you want to say Georgia beating LSU could get two of them in, but that would be a tougher sell, I would imagine. But, yeah, I mean, that's – if the game is not called right down the middle on Saturday, and there it's
we'll be
not,
talking about it the week after.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough week for those in Birmingham, I think, in order of having to deal with people from Auburn.
They've already had to deal with this some. Greg Sankey has. It's been tough for the NFL, but the SEC has had its own issues and has had to make statements on it. We appreciate the call from James and Brian. Let's go back to the phones. 321-1390. You can join us here on the lunch break. Justin Ferguson and Painter Sharpless with you. Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post will join us in about 20 minutes. What's up, Colin?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey. Justin, I think you've touched on this before, but I think the biggest problem with the offense can be summed up with the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about scheme and we know coach versus scheme and all that. I think Gus tried to adapt a few years ago to the way offenses have adapted. And I just think he failed at it. I think that's why he started recruiting different types of linemen. That's why he hired Herb Hand. And instead of getting guys like Braden Smith, you know, just big, powerful run blocking guys, he started focusing on pass blocking linemen, which is why our line is better at pass blocking now than run blocking. That's why he chose Stidham over Malik Willis, who Malik Willis was basically, you know, a Nick Marshall Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why he chose Bo over Gatewood when Gatewood was, you know, considered maybe like a Cam Jr. And I just think he's trying to adapt his offense. Like, give the man credit, he's trying, but yeah. I just don't think he knows quite how to. And I don't know how to either. He doesn't know how to adapt his offense and be. He doesn't know if he wants to be a pass heavy offense or if he wants to stick with his run first approach. And I think as soon as the pass stuff, you know, passing to open up the run, as soon as that doesn't work, he reverts back to his 2013, 2014 days and his 2010 days, but we just don't have the line to do that now. And I think it's just we're too far down the road where he doesn't know what to do. You know, do we continue to try and be a power run team,
mm-hmm.
or do we let Bo throw it 50 times a game? And I'm not sure he knows the answer, and neither of us do, but those are just my two cents. Thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Yeah, appreciate it, Colin. Those are really good points. I agree. I think Malzahn has tried to, like, to say that Auburn hasn't changed its offense and hasn't tried to adapt is incorrect. They've done some new things. It's just there's a gap. It's kind of like they haven't been able to get quite over the hump. It hasn't been able to make the full transition. Malzahn hasn't been able to kind of crack the code for how to make his offense more consistent against good teams against good teams in this day and age. And
yeah, they're not having problems with middle tier and lower tier teams. Like,
in fact, they've been better against those teams than they have been in the past.
I saw last year against State in Tennessee, and I think the loss.
And you hadn't got those this year.
Yeah, and you know, like 2015, or 2016, the loss at Georgia, Kirby Smart's first year, like that one was like, I think y'all were better even with a banged up Sean White. But generally speaking, statistically much better unless they're playing about three teams.
Right, exactly. And so the thing is that you have to be able to adapt and change things over the top. It's just
to me, Auburn is caught between two minds right now on offense. It seems to be they want to do some of the stuff they've done in the past. They might not have the personnel to do it. They might try to adapt to this personnel, but there's something limiting it from going full blast. So it's kind of caught in the middle. I think both of the last two seasons you've been caught in the middle. And Colin mentioned at the beginning at the top, it's the offensive line. I think if Auburn had an offensive line like it did in 13 and 14 and even parts of 7, it definitely in 17, like you can
see how this could have come together.
Right, because I think Nix is a Nix and Williams and Schwartz, you plug them into that 27. You put the 2017 offensive line in this offense. I think you put up some really fascinating numbers this season because I think Williams is more of an overall number one type of receiver. You can do a variety of things with him. Maybe you were not able to do as much with Darius Slayton. I think you can do some different things with Schwartz as a big play guy that you might not have gotten with Ryan Davis. And then the running game, he's not carry-on, but I think you have a variety of ways you can attack. It's just you don't have that. And so you're kind of caught in between trying to adapt and trying to stick to what you know, that familiarity, that comfort level. And you get caught in the middle for sure. Appreciate the call, Colin. There's some very good points there, and I agree with a lot of that.
Yeah, have enjoyed the input. Mm-hmm. A lot of good comments and a few things I hadn't thought about to this point from some of y'all today.
All right, let's get to break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more Auburn football, and we'll get in some basketball talk before we hit the NFL with our guest from the Washington Post.
Listen to the Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Busy week here at the Auburn Network family of stations, Wings 94.3, ESPN 106.7, and News Talk WANI 98.7. This Friday, Auburn High football on Wings 94.3. Coverage at 6:30, kickoff at 7. You can follow along in a number of ways. ESPNAU.com, the ESPN 106.7 app, and of course on Twitter at ESPN 106.7. In 10 minutes, we sit down or we get on the phone with Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post and run through some betting lines for the NFL this weekend. I think a good matchup tonight between the Colts and the Texans. Justin, we wanted to switch gears before we got on the phone with Neil. We haven't talked much basketball yet today. We talked a good bit about it throughout the week, though. Where do we start here? I mean, I want to get on the phone soon with Sam Vecenie. He works with you at The Athletic, or loosely anyway with you at The Athletic. One of the best. Isaac Okoro, so far as you've seen, right, I think a lot of people have him as a late first-round guy. If he continues to play like this, maybe his stock rises. Auburn getting a bit of a break, too. They've played a lot of games early in this season.
This is going to be a really good break.
And I think this is about as great as you could have scripted this. 5-0 now. You get some rest, and then you get to go take on some more good competition next week.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of point out something that I noticed yesterday, kind of going through some stats a couple of days ago. Auburn has, last season got blocked. Blocked shots more than probably a lot of teams in college basketball. This year, they are really finishing well at the rim, and it's just a completely different type of offense that we're seeing this season from Auburn. And I think that when we talk about the upside of this team, I think Auburn has the potential to be just as good as they were last season and the last couple of years. It's just going to be a completely different way they go about it, and it's very interesting to me, and I think it should be exciting for Auburn fans because it's going to be different. It's like that. I know there was a familiarity and a joy in watching them just bomb threes over people over and over again.
But you should be pleased that your coach is adapting.
Yes,
I would say. I think
they're becoming a more versatile team, which I think is going to make them better in the long run.
321-1390, 334-321-1390 is how you can join us. Let's first go to Matt.
Hey, guys. Kind of a curveball. Talk about the NFL. About a week ago, Myles Garrett had this thing with the helmet and Mason Rudolph. I want to, change the dynamic and ask a question. If a college player were to do quite the same thing, or a high school player, I think that they would not be able to play football again. I just thought that was interesting because my dad mentioned that to me, and I was like, what if a college player were to do that thing? I don't think they'd be playing much, if any, at all ever again.
That's a good question.
I hadn't thought about that.
You know, I could see if a college player would have done that, he'd definitely be done for the rest of the season. And I don't know, man. Do you even stay in school at that point? Because do you jump to somewhere else? Does somebody want to take you after that? I agree. I mean,
I don't know what the repercussions would be.
And look, Myles Garrett's out for the rest of the season, and then it could be more.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if he misses a few games next season.
But it's very different, I guess, when you're getting paid millions and millions of dollars to do it compared if you're a guy who is not making any money playing it in high school or playing, like, because they can just ban you at that point. And then in college, I guess you could definitely do the same thing.
Yeah, I know. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Matt, and that's a very interesting point. I hadn't given
consideration to how that could be different at a different level of football.
If somebody did that in college, man, I mean, we might not. I'm agree with you. You might not see him again.
And we're going to have a really intense and like passionate rivalry game in the semifinals. So like, I'm not hoping for that to happen, but between Central and Auburn High, and it's like, if a player did that, I know it's right here at the end of the season, but say this happened earlier in the year, yeah, when Auburn High and Central played
the team.
Exactly. I just don't know if you'd be allowed to come back.
And you can get kicked off the game in college, too. It's hard to kick a guy off the team in the NFL because you got contracts and millions of dollars at stake.
And
especially when you're a guy like Myles Garrett. If it was some, you know, you'd be done off the team, I think, if you were just some, you know, guy making $800,000 a year. It's just like, all right, well, bye, we don't need you anymore. But the fact that it is the former number one pick who's got all this money tied up to him is a very different thing.
The other interesting side of the argument to that is as dangerous as it could have been, because if he had made real contact with Mason Rudolph with the proper part of the helmet, like that could have potentially killed him. But like also regular football hits, like we've seen people not be able to walk afterwards. Mason Rudolph a few weeks ago had to have his face mask. So like
it was close to being really bad.
Yeah, it could have been life altering, but also the game itself can be life altering. Let's go to Paul, who's been patiently waiting. 321-1390, get you through. Paul, your turn.
Couple of questions.
Uh-huh.
First, didn't there used to be a great eight tournament every year for the Elite Eight in the basketball?
It was something like that. I've heard of it before. I need to do some more research on that. But it used to be something along those lines. I'm vaguely familiar with what you're talking about, Paul.
Yeah, I was looking for that, for us to play in that finally. And
Yeah.
I don't have it.
Yeah, it's everybody's like, in, there's so many different ones now that I think they just kind of just spread it out with everything. It used to be you either went to the Maui or you went to the NIT or you went to some of these other things. Now everybody's playing in it. Some schools don't even want to play in these tournaments like Kentucky. Kentucky just wants to play in these big one-off games. So it's gotten a whole lot more fractured, I think.
All right, second question is Gus's offense seems to work well, and then – you know, when he gets going and he finds that rhythm, and you know, they don't, and then he gets inside the 20 to the red zone, it seems to stop. That's when it really slows down and becomes almost painful to watch because it was moving really, really quick.
Yep.
And it's not always that way, but, you know, against Georgia, he was able to score two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But too often, it seems that it slows down inside the 20 or when he gets on, you know, in the opponent's field goal range. And then it just comes to a blistering halt. We end up on the sideline or missing a field goal or making a field goal, 3 points.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Paul. And it goes back to kind of something that we were talking about earlier, Painters. It seems like when he gets in these high-pressure situations, these red zone – Malzahn has some really creative red zone calls and some really good play calls down there. But I think there's a pressure to kind of, you know, we were talking about earlier, Painter, get the perfect play call in. And it kind of gets this overthink. So that pace, that rhythm where you're like – hey, let's call this play and this play and this play and keep going. Well, maybe, you went for 3 yards on this play. Well, maybe this is the time to substitute. Maybe this is time, we're going to get them right here on this one. And Auburn's not executing efficiently enough for it to be like these perfect play calls, like the fourth down play against Georgia last week. Excellent play call. You can argue about whether Joyner needed to be there in that situation, but Bo Nix missed that throw.
Georgia wasn't ready for it, and Bo Nix had a layup of a pass.
And so – it seems like when they get across the 40, they start playing a little bit slower. And I think to me, it's just Malzahn trying to make sure like he gets this perfect play call in to kind of get it going. And
I wonder,
takes away some of that rhythm.
Sometimes too, and this is, I just don't know, different quarterbacks also could respond to different styles of coaching, but Malzahn can be real high energy and like real, almost, you know, over the top on the sideline. It's sort of like they're the means of him playing the drums. And to some extent, I wonder when Bo and the team is going fast, if they're taking less time to look to the sideline and just reacting a little more naturally. But a good call there, both from Matt and Paul. We appreciate you guys chiming in.
Yeah, let's get to break when we come back, Painter.
Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post joins us.
You're on the Abby Award-winning Best Sports Show in Alabama for 2 years in a row. The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. You're hearing The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Call 321-1390 or toll free 1-888-382-7502.
About half an hour to go here on today's show. We should be connecting with Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. Shortly, we'll talk some about different NFL betting lines this weekend. Some good games, starting with one tonight between the Texans and the Colts. 321-1390 is how you can join us. Congratulations to our Week 12 winner of the ESPN 106.7 College Football Challenge. Make your picks every week to win prizes every week, and the grand prize at the end of the season. Congrats to Robin of Midland, Georgia. She won $25 to Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza. Go to ESPNAU.com to make your weekly picks. Again, Neil Greenberg joins us shortly by phone. We look forward to talking to him about the NFL. Right now, though, I want to continue our conversation, Justin, on Auburn hoops and the direction that they seem to be going. It's so early in the season. When I talked to Blake Lovell while you were out on Tuesday with right. Gus's press conference, we kind of both agreed, like, to this point, Auburn has looked the best of any team in the SEC.
Absolutely.
However, as Auburn fans found out, it's a long season. Mm-hmm. Auburn's going to find itself in some rough patches. Also, other teams like Florida, Kentucky, maybe Tennessee, LSU, who've struggled just a bit to get things going, I think they're going to work things out by conference play. They're going to look a lot better than they have now. Florida's really struggling to shoot the ball, which has been a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Auburn here is that, like, they've gone through already a pretty tough stretch of their non-conference schedule. You know, you look at their non-conference opponents left in the schedule, Furman, New Mexico, and NC State are all going to be pretty good teams, but, you know, they're around Davidson's level. Like, it's not like they're, you know, it's not like Auburn's got this challenge is going to ramp up. They're going to get some games where they're going to be able to tee off shortly when they play Lehigh and Lipscomb right before SEC play starts. But think about this, Painter. They played five games. You know, there's only seven non-conference games left for them. Like, we're almost halfway through the non-conference play, and we thought, oh, Auburn might be a grind. And they've looked outstanding to this point. And I think you could think they're only going to get better from here.
Yeah, they stay healthy with all the young talent and players taking on new roles. You would assume that those roles become more comfortable. We are trying to connect with Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. We are looking forward to talking to him about some of what's happening this weekend in the NFL, and we're going to get you his thoughts on some different lines. 321-1390, you can connect with us after we're done talking with Neil. Neil, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for giving us some of your time. I know you're busy, busy time of the year in general. You've got work up at the Washington Post, not hard to find, where you go through and break down a number of lines this weekend. We'll start with the game tonight that I'm curious about. Sort of feels like to me that Bill O'Brien and his staff have held back Deshaun Watson and this Texans offense. I don't know how that, but a 3.5-point difference between the Colts and the Texans. Where do you stand on this game? I think it's an interesting point for two teams that it feels like they could have more, and of course with Jacoby Brissett, who's playing okay to this point, but look, he's not Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly overperformed in terms of you know, how good everyone thought that he would be. I think the drop-off hasn't been nearly as bad. But, you know, in games like this, I think it's safe to say you want to go with the better quarterback. And, I mean, there's no doubt that that's Deshaun Watson. Curious to see how the J.J. Watt injury affects that. But, you know, the Texans are coming in. They were just blown out by the Ravens, as you know. The Colts are doing really well against the spread. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that this is, you know, you look at the Colts, Marlon Mack's out. T.Y. Hilton might not play. Their tight end is a little bit banged up. So I think that in this instance, I think Houston is able to win and at least cover, what is it, the 3.5 points that are right now.
Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post joining us. You mentioned in your piece at the Washington Post that there are some bottom feeders that, in terms of betting, have gotten some good value this season.
Yeah, that surprised me a little bit. I mean, you know, we never really expect the underdogs to do well when they're getting, you know, a ton of points. Usually that's a sign that it's a really lopsided event. But they're 18-43 straight up when they get at least 4 points on the road. But they're 35-23-2, which is over a 58% win rate on against the spread, which, you know, you ask any professional bettor, I mean, they would love to have a 58% win streak. It means that they're consistently beating the book. And, you know, you look at two of the worst teams in the NFL, the Bengals, who are winless, and the Miami Dolphins, who are doing everything they can to lose except for the last couple weeks. And they're 7-2-0 against the spread when getting 4 more points on the road. So I think that there is some value there, and I highlighted two of those games this week.
Around here, a lot of folks care about Cam Newton, which means the Panthers by the transitive property. Of course, he's not had much of a season with them this year. Kyle Allen instead taking over. Saints heavy favorites in that one by 9.5 points. Your thoughts on this? It seems like the wave of momentum Kyle Allen had at the beginning of the year is beginning to disappear.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly didn't do himself any favors last week against the Falcons, throwing 4 interceptions. But, you know, the offense, I think, is going to live and die by Christian McCaffrey anyway. Mm-hmm. He's just dominating the league in terms of touches, yards from scrimmage. You know, I think you got to worry about that Panthers pass rush. I mean, yeah. You know, they don't just have one guy that's doing all the work, right? Outside linebacker Marianison has 8 sacks, but they have a bunch of other guys that can get pressure. And it's not just sacks. I mean, they're putting quarterbacks on the ground. And, you know, the New Orleans offensive line has been one of the better offensive line this year. They've done a good job at keeping Drew Brees out of trouble. But, you know, again, anytime you have an older quarterback with an injury history going up against a pass rush that does a good job of getting home, whether that's a sack or at least, you know, legal contact, I think that, you know, they should be given a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. So, you know, I think the spread is pretty big here based mostly on because of what Allen did last week. But I like the Panthers and 9.5. I think that there's some value there.
He's at N Greenberg on Twitter, and he's with the Washington Post. Not hard to find his work, and if you would like some great insight into NFL lines this week, he's got you covered. Another regional game here, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jameis Winston turning the ball over a lot. The Falcons, not a great record, but they're beating some solid teams, oddly enough. 4.5-point favorite in favor of the Falcons. How do you feel about this matchup? I just don't know what to think about either team and what version of the team I'm going to get week to week.
Yeah, I think there's been some legitimate improvement by the Falcons, especially yeah. After the you know, especially after the bye week, right? I mean, they've been a completely different different defense after the bye week. So if you're Tampa Bay, I mean, you gotta have some concern there that this isn't the team that we've been seeing early on. So I think that you know, that's certainly something that you need to take into account. And you know, who knows if it's going to last, right? Because if we know anything, we know that NFL teams are good at adapting one way or the other. But, you know, based on what we've seen, I definitely like what the improvement over the past couple weeks. So I'm okay with the Falcons giving some points, which, 4.5 right now.
Neil Greenberg joining us here on the lunch break this afternoon. Green Bay at San Francisco. San Francisco a slight favorite in this one. Your thoughts on this matchup and if the Packers can continue to roll offensively. Been a great year for Shanahan and the 49ers.
Yeah, I think you know, the big thing for me is that that pass defense of the 49ers. I mean, they've been every bit as good as New England has, but I'd argue it comes against better competition. So maybe you feel a little bit better in terms of you know, believing that they can keep it up. So I think that their average passer rating against is like 60 something, which is nothing compared to what we're seeing in the NFL. You know, quarterbacks putting up 100 passer ratings, etc. And there's no team that gets a higher pressure rate. They're pressuring quarterbacks on 1 every 3 dropback. So, you know, I think, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, I mean, if you can disrupt the passing game with that type of pressure, not necessarily blitz pressure, but with actual pressure, and you're able to disrupt the you know, let's face it, the Green Bay, you know, centers around Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. You know, if you can disrupt that, I think that, that you have an edge. So for me, this is a relatively easy call, 49ers, given the points.
Check out his great work at the Washington Post. Neil Greenberg joining us as we wrap up the game. I'm looking forward to most this weekend, the Cowboys at the Patriots. How do you feel about this matchup? You know, you got Dak Prescott. Intriguing to see what they'll do with his contract at the end of the year or at some point. Tom Brady, that team kind of slumping offensively over the last few weeks, but they've only got one loss on the year. How do you feel about the way this game goes?
Well, I think this is, you know, we're going to see how good the defense is for the Patriots, right? Because, you know, you can argue they haven't really played anybody. Yeah. They haven't really been able to, you know, you haven't really been able to get a good feel for it. But, you know, Lamar Jackson was able to bust through that, and I think Dak Prescott could have a relatively decent day. And let's face it, I mean, you know, decent is good against the Patriots because, you know, they're allowing a quarterback rating of like 46 this year, which, you know, you get a quarterback rating of 39 and change just for throwing the ball in the dirt. So, you know, what do they have, 19 interceptions now and only two passing touchdowns again. So, I mean, if Dak Prescott can have just, you know, an average day, I think that, you know, the Cowboys can at least keep it close, right? I don't know if New England's offense is able to put that many points on the board. They've, you know, they weren't able to put more than 20 last week. I think Tom Brady is definitely on the decline. So I think I think Dallas can certainly keep this close. And for me, that's enough to take the points and run here. I think that, you know, the New England is, I don't want to say there's a suspect favorite, a Super Bowl favorite, but there's certainly some reasons that you can doubt them. So, you know, you're getting almost a touchdown. If you're taking the Cowboys, I think that that might be enough.
Neil, as always, appreciate it. Hope we will do this again soon. Great to have you back on, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you guys soon.
That's Neil Greenberg with the Washington Post. Follow him on Twitter at NGreenberg. Enjoy his NFL insight. And if you're into a little gambling, he's got you covered. We'll get into our final break here on the lunch break. The AHS report is tonight, folks. That's right after the drive with Bill Cameron. Excuse me. The Coach Pat Dye show is right after the drive with Bill Cameron. Should be a good one this week. Neil Calloway sits down with Coach Dye and Tim Ellen on the Coach Pat Dye Show. They talk Auburn, Georgia, and more. We'll be right back.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
If you miss any of today's show, you can check out our podcast presented by University Ace Hardware on ESPNAU.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to your podcast. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place located next to the movie theater in Auburn. Appreciate Neil Greenberg from The Athletic hopping on, from The Washington Post from hopping on with us. Nicole Arbach from The Athletic, I should say, for hopping on with us today. A lot of good calls, a lot of good comments. We appreciate that. Nicole put out a question on Twitter that related to our conversation earlier. If you got fired, would you keep your – if you were a coach and you got fired, would you keep your gear?
It probably depends on how the firing happened. Like, is the whole staff going out?
That was my answer. It was like, all right, if I'm in a shift change, basically, and it's just like, all right, well, everyone's running out. Like, yeah. But if they're like, you're getting fired you were the problem on this team. I'm like, yeah, I probably wouldn't.
Probably this free gear, bad taste in my mouth. I'd rather not.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean.
But that powder blue that North Carolina has or whatever color they describe it as, like if I'm Gene Chizik, I know I live in Auburn and he and his family seemingly like the community and enjoy being a part of it.
I know he's got some of it.
But I would rock that blue all day. It is a classy look.
I don't know if he wears it around, but I know he's got it.
Who are you going to blame the guy? Like, look, he brought you a national title and then he went and helped North Carolina get to an ACC championship game. Sorry, it's a good looking color. Sue me. Sue me. All right.
Well, also, let's think about this. Also, he's got Iowa State stuff. I don't know if you really want to.
That's a tough color. The McDonald's color, the off-brand McDonald's color, is not a great look.
Now, Gene was at Texas, right?
Yep.
That's it.
It's fine. The burnt orange. Depends on how you feel about the burnt orange.
I like it.
You can make it work. What about Miami? You spent some time as a defensive backs coach at Miami?
Right. Let's look this up.
Am I a lying liar who lies, Justin, or am I onto something here? We're going to do a little intel here because I could dig the orange and green. I'm not sure how burnt orange would work in my ensemble, but I would definitely
dig
the UNC.
You're thinking of UCF.
Excuse me. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. So, UCF?
I'm not a big gold guy.
But he was at UCF towards the end of their run, like before they switched all their stuff. Like, this is like the one with the UCF logo with like the lance going through it. Yeah.
Throwback. Yeah. Sometimes throwbacks can be great. Like the Giants, man, their throwback unis are dope.
The Giants?
I love.
Really?
I love that blue, like, cursive they've got on there. Is it not cursive? Whatever font it is.
The italicized one?
I guess that's
where
what it
it's
is.
Giants with a line under it?
Yeah, I guess
it is. Did you think that was cursive?
I guess so. Because the Gators, they have cursive.
That's the cursive font. Yes. 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 The Giants have always been like really boring to me, though.
But the all whites with that not cursive italicized helmet, though, not a good look. I'm
not a fan.
I also know that you you want more colors in Major League Baseball that are not blue uniforms.
Red and blue. Oh, more non-red and blue teams.
So
we talked about the Padres going to brown and gold. They're going back to brown. The Brewers announcing this week that they are switching back to their old MB, the baseball glove logo, the old one. So not the M with the little whatever the
sure
whatever the little thing is that makes you think of beer.
We love it, don't we?
But they're going back with the glove and the ball, and I think that's a cool looking logo.
How do we feel about Penn State and Alabama's uniforms? I like them. They're very similar, with the exception essentially that Alabama has a number on the helmet and Penn State doesn't, but they basically just got a couple stripes on different parts of the jersey and pants and then one stripe going down the helmet. I like States. Some people find them to be much too boring.
I think they're boring, but like it also fits. Like, what are you going to do at Alabama? Like, what are you going to change?
Why would you actually at Alabama?
I think if Alabama rolled out in a white helmet at one point,
be clean. They like Auburn, maybe even to a greater degree, have no interest in changing their
historic
look. I
think when you have a
look.
Classic look, you don't need to change it.
And a classic look that's simple and people associate with winning because they see that jersey, that helmet, and the association is, really good football team.
Right. See, like Michigan's done a bunch of funky stuff with their uniforms in the last 10 years, but they've kept that helmet. That helmet's you're always going to get the Chrysler wings on it.
Objectively bad helmet, by the way.
Really?
Not a fan. I liked it when I was playing video games when I was a kid, creating teams. Then I did it. Then I grew up.
How do you feel about going to the NFL? How do you feel about the Bengals helmet? I like the Bengals helmet. I don't like their uniforms. Like, it's like this really blocky looking stuff and with the weird stuff on the patterns on their sleeves and stuff like that.
There's no doubt the Bills have the best uniforms in the league.
So the other night,
no doubt.
What was it? The Monday night game. The Monday night game with the Seahawks and the Niners.
When the Seahawks are in their whites.
I thought those were the two of the best uniforms. The Niners home uniforms. Classic. It's a perfect look. The gold, the red, the gold. And then the Seahawks, if you want to go for a modern uniform, I really like the Seahawks.
Theirs got so much better when Nike took over. They had some of the worst in the league, and now I really like the Seahawks. All right, since you guys asked for my opinions on stylistic choices, let's smoothly segue into what's on the night.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
I also think the Falcons should wear their throwbacks every week.
Yes, every time.
Yeah.
It's not even close, ladies and gentlemen. Give me the 90s
The old Dirty
Falcons.
Bird. The old Dirty Bird looking.
I have no skin in the game, but yes.
All right, how do you feel about this uniform matchup? Fox 720 tonight, Colts-Texans. Colts are clean. Colts are really clean. I think it works very well. Texans,
they've got the advantage of being red, white, and blue.
Sometimes they get some stuff where it looks really weird when they start mixing and matching stuff. I like the Colts, though. The Colts have a very clean look.
I get that. I would rather have the Texans, but I get where you're coming from with the Colts. Something about
The Texans have a uniform when they go blue helmet, red jersey, blue pants. That's an objectively nice uniform.
Yeah, give me the Texans, but I appreciate and will respect your answer of the Colts.
The Colts, I just like how they're classic.
Yes.
It's very clean.
Historic team.
Mm-hmm.
Old team. NFL team.
NBA tonight, TNT at 7, Trailblazers Bucks. Have you seen the new city jerseys they've come out with in the NBA? All right, the Mavericks have the worst ones ever. Look up Maverick city jerseys and I want you to give me your reaction to them live on air. The Bucks is also not a good one either, but the Mavericks is just really bad. 9:30 Pelicans Suns happening.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Why'd they do that?
I don't know. Because it doesn't make sense.
Who okayed that?
I don't know. It's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air looking uniforms.
Why? Why'd they do that? I mean, I'm a big proponent of the 90s, but that's just not it.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That's not it.
ESPN at 7 o'clock tonight, college football action, NC State and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, the Yellow Jackets, they're in
Atlanta.
Not
Virginia Tech.
Nope. They take on NC State tonight. A little ACC goofiness that could happen.
Could be a great game, could be a terrible game.
That's probably, though, the Adam Amin, Matt Hasselbeck, why am I blanking?
McAfee?
Guys
in the booth for that game.
Yeah, that's that whole crew. It's the best in college football right now.
Well, in like a game like this that could be wildly and weirdly entertaining, or one team just makes it boring.
I want McAfee to call an SEC game.
I'm curious to see. Yeah, and like with more time, they probably will allow him to. Give me a mean
Hasselbeck and McAfee calling. Like, they're not calling the SEC game of the week, but like if they called
Missouri and Georgia.
Dude, what if they'd have called McAfee would have been great for Auburn, Georgia this past week for the amount of punting that was happening. And just the dumb good
he
punting.
He would have been going insane.
Because Kamara had some excellent punts. And look, Aaron Sipos had some really good punts as well in that game.
Yeah, he got overshadowed, but it was a good day of punting for both teams, which neither fan base wants.
College basketball this afternoon, the Myrtle Beach Classic Invitational, whatever they're calling it, continues. Villanova's playing right now. ESPN2 at 3:30, Ohio and Baylor playing. ESPNU at 6 o'clock tonight, number 18, Xavier taking on Towson. ACC Network at 7:30, Toledo and Notre Dame. And then the big one tonight, ESPN2 at 8, number 1, Duke taking on Cal.
Duke back in the number 1 spot after Kentucky lost to Evansville.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more low-key this year just because they don't have that ridiculous group of freshmen on their team. Of course, they're being talked about, but not quite like last year. I bet Coach K is okay with it.
HBO Family at 11:20, the Dan Peck Memorial HBO Pickup of the Evening.
RIP, we love you, Dan.
The Big Green.
The Big Green, the GOAT, the soccer team that is a dream. A classic film from what, the mid-90s?
Yeah.
Thereabouts?
Mid, late 90s.
Great stuff. Good work. Was that a Disney film?
I believe so. HGTV at 9:30, finally. House Hunters International's in Barcelona.
Barcelona. Excellent, excellent. Good luck to Alex. He has arrived and is sipping on some wine, I've heard, in Barcelona.
Seems like the thing to do in Barcelona.
Yeah, he said he's not going to try to meet many people. He's just going to try to enjoy it, do less touristy things, enjoy that trip. Also enjoy...
Sounds like me going anywhere.
Yeah, you're like, hey, look, I'm doing this for myself.
I'm not here to meet people.
ESPN 106.7 has a number of ways to keep you connected. You can do so with the app. Also at ESPNAU.com, and with your smart speaker, ESPN 106.7 on smart devices is powered by Point Broadband. About a minute and a half to go in today's show. Tomorrow, Max Olson of The Athletic will join us. We talk about college football in the last 2 weeks here in the regular season. Justin, you've been busy at The Athletic. What's going on?
Yeah, story of today. Auburn's defense is the best since what? Painter, first thing pops in your head. Best defense Auburn's had since when?
04?
See, here's the thing about 04. I'm going to give you a little lowdown about 04. Okay. 04's defense was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
This defense is probably better due to the fact that they have similar numbers this season. Of course, the 04 defense, fewer points per game. Keep in mind, the best offense the 04 defense played that season was Tennessee. They did it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you look at S&P Plus ratings this season, Auburn has played 7 offenses that are better than the 04 that are better than the 04 Tennessee offenses. Tulane has a better offense than the 04 Tennessee offense.
Okay, give me a Pat Dye offense from 1982 to 1989.
So, 1988, I want to point this out. I think this is the best Auburn defense since 1988. Here's why. Or 89 played a tougher schedule and they were really good. 88 is like, this is absurd. In 1988, Auburn's defense allowed 7 points a game and 3.6 yards per play. 3.6. Opponents averaged rushing the ball.
They
in
were,
an era where you only really wanted to run the ball very much, 63 yards a game.
They were wrecking.
1989, though, their defensive S&P was 8.8. Okay? To give you a context, Ohio State is beating the brains out of everybody this year, 9.5.
Check out that story. Some great numbers and comparisons from Justin on just how good Auburn's defense has been this year. Enjoyed it with you, Nicole, our callers, Neil Greenberg, Justin. We're back tomorrow at 11. Follow him on Twitter at JFergusonAU. Follow me at Paint Sharpless. Stay tuned to ESPN 106.7 all throughout the day. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. The Drive with Bill Cameron from 4 to 6 as they are every day. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 11. Until then, keep it toasty.